Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, author, coach, and futurist, Samantha Sweetwater.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Michael Gungor. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Early this morning, I was listening to a podcast, the Love Covered Life podcast with Melissa Dennessy, I think you pronounce her name. And on the podcast, she was interviewing Reverend Dr. Norma Edwards. The episode was called, I Died and Saw That I Completely Failed My Pre-Birth Plan. So the premise was that Dr. Edwards had a near-death experience, or what she described as a near-death experience, years prior. And during that experience, amongst other things, she was shown a big screen wherein on the screen there was a chart. And on one side of the chart were the lessons or the things she was going to learn when she came down to Earth. That was the pre-birth plan. In the middle column of the chart were the experiences that had happened or were to happen that were going to teach her those lessons, or from which she would learn those lessons. And on the third column, there were the results, like a report card of whether she succeeded in learning those lessons or not. She said that when she looked at the third column, it was as if someone had taken a rubber ink stamp and stamped each of the boxes on the right. I don't mean to laugh. I'm thinking of my life. That's why I'm laughing. Each of the boxes on the right side of that column, on the column, as failed. She had failed each and every one of them, she says. There was much more to the story, and she did such a beautiful job of sharing that I don't want to give any more away. You can go and hear her tell the story. But suffice it to say, that was one of my big takeaways from her story, that we come with lessons. A lot of us know that, a lot of us believe that, and we're given situations to learn from those lessons. And a lot of us know that, or a lot of us believe that, and then we either get them, or I believe we probably have to repeat them again. So I got to thinking about my life just a little bit this morning, and I feel like there are lessons I definitely have learned, and I know that there are lessons that I definitely have not learned. And as I reflected on this experience, I thought, oh, here's one of my things that I say when I don't want to learn a lesson. I say, it's not supposed to be like this. Or I say something like, I don't want this anymore. And the fact that the word this came up reminded me of our guest and how, you know, loving this or recognizing this or being here is part of what she talks about. So having said that, I thought about her, and I also thought about our performance guests, both of whom have so much wisdom to impart. And I thought, well, I can't speak for them, but I am sure that they have gotten their wisdom from so many lessons and experiences that they have had, those they wanted to have, and maybe even more so than from those they didn't want to have. So I can't wait to get into the show. I guess this is all part of the human experience.
I maybe there's a silver lining, because I'm happy to know that I probably don't even need to wait until after I die and review.
You already know.
Still pretty confident. Whatever plan I had, I've fallen short.
No, but.
But tonight's episode will straighten me and all of us out even more.
Well, we've titled tonight's episode is actually from one of our previous guests, Daniel Schmachtenberger, is it?
That's right.
Who was on the show and we love dearly, a good friend of Mark's as well. And he wrote about the book. He said, she gives rise to a love affair with reality. In other words, this, if we could face the this. So the title of the episode is Giving Rise to a Love Affair with Reality. And it's episode 880. And we are featuring an author, a coach, a futurist, and founder of One Life Circle, Samantha Sweetwater. Welcome, Samantha, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you, Filippo. It's a delight to be here.
What a pleasure to connect with you. I have to say also right off the bat, thank you to Will Peterson. I mean, we all knew you, Mark. It's like, yeah, of course. So glad he put you on our radar for the show tonight. So happy to have you.
And thankful
to him. So I looked at all your thises. No, not all of them. Nobody knows all of them, but it's like, there's this, she did this, and there's this, and how did she do that? And the thises and the that's, like, what was the this and that you thought you were going to do for sure? Was it dance?
Well, I think everyone thought I was going to be, you know, a doctor, a lawyer, a Supreme Court justice. And I thought I was going to be me. And I think, I think my life, all the thises have been defined by a really deep listening to, you know, what my soul wants to express and do. And dance definitely was at the center of that for really 3 decades of my life. And so I didn't really intend for dance to be that. But dance was the medium and the context where I got to explore a lot of other things like building community and connecting people with nature and deep transformational work and states work. And I never thought I would be a seed farmer, which is something that I got to do for a couple years.
And but of course you're a seed farmer. I'm sorry to interrupt, but of course. I mean, that's what you do. Why not actually do it too?
Exactly.
Go on, sorry.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that these days, the way I experience the this is like I'm really driven by the listening to, like, what does the world need? What do people need? Where do my gifts and skills and talents and the bundle that I'm carrying, really, of a lot of stories and wisdom and practice, where does that meet the calling of the world? And I think that question has really driven my life.
Well, that question could drive some people, like, in some really interesting places at this time.
It could. I agree. It's a juicy question that it attuned us to the context that we're in. And there's so many things that need our love and our care and our attention at this time.
So when you are like, so we're going to get into the book and the title just strikes right away, True Human, Reimagining Ourselves at the End of Our World. So I took the end of our world, well, all the true human, we could break this up and like talk about it for days, I'm sure, but at the end of our world, I took it as the end of our world as we know it, or what?
Yes, that you're correct. I mean, the end of our world as a set of constructs that has patterned civilization, has patterned the Western mind, has patterned our ideas about success and our ideas about wealth and our ideas about status and what is meaningful. And I think There's different ways you can say that we're at the end of that world. And certainly AI is creating incredible destabilization and very quickly. And I think we're only just beginning to see that as agents become something really normative and AI systems get even more powerful, where there's ways in which the world we grow up in is very quickly receding into, the tail mirror. But there's also ways in which, if we want to move into a flourishing future, what it calls for is a deeper sense of our place within life, within the biospheric process, within the land that we occupy, and the relationships with water and soil and food and the animal world and the elemental world that make our lives possible. And so that actually is a, it's like the end of the world where the human project is a project of domination and control, to the beginning of a world where the human project is one of collaboration and co-creation.
How is it possible that we come from the world, I imagine, that we lose that connection? What could possibly create that? Or is that potentially a journey of part of the human experience to experience that and then retract or change?
I mean, I don't think it's a necessary part of the human experience. We're the most plastic organism on the planet. We're culturally crafted. We interdepend with the cultural matrices that we grow up in. So, currently on the planet, there are hunter-gatherer societies that are deeply reciprocal with nature, and where living people right now on the planet know themselves in community and kinship with nature. And there's, people who really see themselves as non-embodied, like basically brain on a stick kind of transhumanist worldview, where, the body is just an inconvenience to be transcended in digital immortality. That's the spectrum.
I'm thinking, depending on what kind of brain is on the stick, maybe that's not great either.
Right, exactly. But the process of separation from nature, I think about as a epochal developmental process that an organ, like, to give a little construction, a little framing of this, I think we're in, we human beings, Homo sapiens, are a very unique class of organisms inside the Gaian system. And I think of Gaia as a principle in the universe. So I think our Earth is probably not the only planet in the whole of the universe where there are conscious, complex life forms. And in a Gaia, a species like ourselves arises that has the impulse to differentiate itself from the ecology. And so, in that sense, I think of what I call separation from nature, and the idea that one and or one's species is separate from the natural process of the rest of life,
And
and
better
or
than.
superior and better than, is a phase that you could actually look at neutrally, somewhat non-dually, as a phase of development that actually reaches its zenith in a time when there's a reckoning with the destruction that's caused by that worldview. And we're in that time. We're in a time when we've met and exceeded 7 out of the 9 planetary boundaries, which are the safe operating space for life on the Earth. And we, are building these existential technologies, AI and robotics and nanotech and nuclear and et cetera, et cetera. And we are facing massive polarization and coordination problems and communication problems at scale. And so we need to like face that as an evolutionary opportunity, which my hypothesis is that the opportunity there is to re-establish our sense of relatedness, our sense of interdependence and interbeing with everything else, and then that the evolutionary horizon of that civilizationally is moving from a world of separability, the world we came up in, the end of the world as we've known it has been a world of separability, to a world of relationality, where the baseline a priori assumption is that we are interdependent with everything else, and that in that interdependence, we interdepend. And so our job becomes a relational one of relational repair and reciprocity and complementarity, of like participating in a process that is an ecology of organisms and forces of nature and ourselves and technology to attempt a higher order of planetary harmony.
Samantha, I like it. And you will know exactly where my mind went, because we actually talked about it before. As I was perusing your book, I came to the, wait a minute, we don't even have the relationship with ourselves and our body or the person next to us. How do we think about a planet? How do we
Well, you can
bridge?
start with your own body. Like, we don't need to go all the way to the planet, but the recognition that our bodies are participating in life, and that the place to start is really by one of my favorite practices, that's such a good place to start, is just taking time to receive the sun in the morning and breathe the air. It's like the simple act of getting up, getting out of bed, and going outside to receive some sunlight, which it turns out is also really good for establishing our circadian rhythm and good for sleep hygiene and good for focus. It's good for all kinds of things, but it's connecting your body to the larger cycles of the earth body and the sun's body, and it's a really great way to connect with one's own body.
I know you quote people in the book, and so I just want to make sure before I read too much of this, but are these your words? Life is calling you home?
I think so.
We then let me continue. We incarnate to dignify humanness. Oh my goodness. Simply by being fully alive. Speak to us about that.
I think we are so obsessed with cognitive capacity, with and productivity and achievement, and we forget that, like, the beauty that we're here to experience, the vitality, that even the meaning really lives in being present in our lives. It lives in tasting the olive oil and that you dip the French bread in, and it lives in which I was just doing before we were on this call, one of my favorite flavors.
Nice.
It lives in, the time that the pause you take to like really smell your partner's neck. It lives in, it's in the senses, it's in shared connection, it's in just the felt sense of one's own breath. And I think we like, it's like we're looking beyond ourselves all the time, and beyond ourselves in time and beyond ourselves in place, and so much of the aliveness is lost. And I think that that's actually both the ground of sufficiency as well as the ground of and vitality and real wealth. Like, if we can't experience our lives, what is any of it, the rest of it, for? It's just like a proxy for something that could actually be much more essential and rich. And I think that's particularly a handicap of the mind of modernity. Like, I think there are a lot of people on the planet who live more in the vitality of their own experience. But I also think it's a training we don't get. You know, we're trained to sit in desks and do the right thing and get the A, and we're trained on those kinds of dopamine loops, and the full aliveness is all the neurotransmitters. It's full spectrum experience. And I
True
think that
human.
really matters.
True human. That is so deep. And of course, you go really deep in your book and your work, with everything that you're doing, especially at this time, the true human concept, or just that those words, they bring up yes. And there's AI, or yes, and we can go on and on, but let's touch on the yes, and there's AI. Where
Well, I
do
mean,
we
it
fit
where do we fit in? I mean,
in?
we can touch and be touched, we can feel and be felt, we can live the imperfection of the poetry, you know. We get to live here in the full spectrum of being an organism. And I think it's almost like we've tried to transcend being organisms, but what makes us most human is our organismic imperfection. And so I think it's kind of amazing suddenly being sandwiched, really, between the animals we said we were above and the technology that we created. Like, we created the evolutionary pyramid that puts us at the top of it is a self-created narrative that's has no real truth to it. But there is an evolutionary progression, and in some ways we are in the middle of a sandwich now of a kind of intelligent kinds of intelligence that are faster and more precise than us, but that they don't have other kinds of intelligence that we have, which is the ways in which we relate we relate to time in the way that biology relates to time. That's amazing. Like, we work so hard to move so fast, but what we actually get is the fullness of our days, or the emptiness. That's what we actually get. That's the stitch any one of us is weaving into life. So I almost think that AI invites us to examine. It invites us to do things like pick painting back up and pick poetry back up and pick instruments back up and take the time to do the imperfect work of supporting each other in psycho-emotional process. You know, it's like AI therapists are really attractive because they're never tired. They're always spunky, but it's in the imperfection of the way that we do these things with each other as humans, whether it's with a friend or a partner or a therapist or a coach, that it's in that imperfection that the bandwidths of information live that are most meaningful. They're the bandwidths that are somatic and emotional and empathic. And I think the and is calling us as the back, similar to the quote that you read, it's calling us to really choose to be fully alive.
Well said, both in the quote and just now. You call to mind, it almost feels like we are given what we need, and then when we don't accept it, or we don't take whatever we can from it, then we don't end up here. So So wherever here is, whatever this is, when we talked about your many this is and your many that's, if there was AI around and you knew of it when you were born and you could have plugged in, hey, AI, what's supposed to be of my life? Oh, you're going to be an author and an amazing life coach. Okay, great. I'll go do that now. We would have skipped something, wouldn't we have?
We would have. Yes.
Tell us about the imperfect journey.
All the initiations and vulnerabilities and losses and dramas and, you know, I love how Josh Schrey says wisdom needs a body. And I also think wisdom needs time and wisdom needs failure. And wisdom needs trials, and it needs friction. In the book, I talk about the friction principle, that the best things are made with friction. Diamonds and babies and all kinds of things are made with friction. And
diamonds and babies.
Yes.
I've never heard that. That's got to be yours.
It's mine.
It's yours. Okay. Pressure, I have heard for diamonds. But okay, go on. Please.
But we need friction to mature. And being here is the place where vulnerability happens. It's the place where we get confronted with what we don't know. You know, it's the place where we get to tolerate actually succeeding and feeling what it feels like to be seen, all of those things, right? So I think.
Yes, please.
Oh, please.
Well, when these thises are uncomfortable, when the friction is happening and it's more of the, you know, the kind that we don't like, to be able to pause and say, oh, I'm human, or this is part of being a true human. Like what do we do? What do we say? Like, this is what's going to help me be more like Samantha. What do we say?
Well, I think we get a little bit of distance and we observe ourselves. And there's a point at which we see, I love this feeling. It's this point where you see yourself as beautiful, pathetic, and funny all at the same time. It's like you get enough distance, you look back and you're like, oh, poor little creature. And like, oh, silly little creature. Oh gosh. Oh my God. Wasn't that? Wow, look, you were doing your best. Like all of those, that whole spectrum. And you look back and you see all of those things. And that's where humility dawns. Is like, and humility isn't an up or a down stance. Humility is like the integration of imperfection in a way where self-confidence is totally unarmored. Because like armored self-confidence isn't very interesting. It's bravado. But unarmored confidence that is humble is really, really, really beautiful. Mm. And I strive to see myself clearly enough in to be able to continue to integrate those qualities.
That distinction you made reminded me of another distinction that you make between awakening and remembering.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, I think of awakening as the awakening to the reality of consciousness. In Tibetan Buddhism, it's the coming into contact with primordial reality, which is formless, timeless, boundless, moves through everything. And for me, like at the core of awakening is the attunement to what I call the no self, which is pure awareness. And that pure awareness is the same at the heart of all I selves. So any self observing that consciousness will actually contact the same consciousness. And awakening is about that. It's a decontextualizing process that is profoundly relieving, deeply ego dissolving. It helps one take oneself far less seriously. And life in general, it can really unwind a whole bunch of drama and attachment very quickly in a way that's profoundly helpful. And then there is the specificity of, and the uniqueness of being a soul in relationship to oneself and other souls, in relationship to the world, in relationship to time and causality and process. And remembering to me is about coming down from the elevation of consciousness itself and into the sea of uniqueness that is the soul ecology, that is all things related to all other things, where each one of us has a unique, we have a unique soul tasks that we incarnate with to learn, like to unwind, to unpack that and do one's best to learn those lessons. That's a process of remembering. And remembering is everything we do to tend our own souls and stitch our lives into the fabric of relationality in a way that is beautiful.
I hear relationality. I hear unique. And some people might think that the relational is togetherness and the unique is separate, but it's not. And this whole separation thing, I loved what you were saying about that in the book. Can we please talk to that a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. Separation is the cut where we distance ourselves or dissociate or break the felt sense of belonging and participation within the field of all of these unique parts dancing together. So the essential map I use for the kind of structure of reality is that you could be with it all as one, and that would be an awakening being with. You could be with it all, as the many, as the infinite dance of the symphony of unique entities all dancing to co-construct reality together. Or you could be with each part, with oneself, with another person, with your cat, and you can be with in communion. Like in the work that I teach, it's the way through separation is to come fully alive, is to enter life fully, be fully here, and to connect with yourself and others, to connect with that all and the dance between, and to participate in it in a way that is committed to coherence and harmony, that is attuned to self and attuned to other and attuned to world, and that's interested in communion being common union and being with. So it's not an ascensionary path. It's not a path that says we're all going to go to some point at which we will all be one again in the one sense of things. It's to say what we're doing is we're tending the symphony. We're bringing our own, we're tuning our own instrument and bringing that instrument in a way that is additive to the song.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love what you're bringing, and I would love to continue this conversation for at least 3 hours. you're so easy to speak to and listen, and I'm enjoying the book True Human, Reimagining Ourselves at the End of Our World, Samantha Sweetwater. That's the book, and it's available where books are sold. And Samantha, Samantha, Sweetwater, just like it sounds, Sweet Water, Water, com. She's on Instagram as Samantha Sweetwater and LinkedIn, and we have her links at the Life Changes Show page. Samantha, as we bring this to a close, I know you work with people one-on-one and groups, and you do all kinds of things, and people can learn about that at your website. And you've already given us so much to think about, and I asked you, like, how do people connect with themselves? And I loved your answer. You said, it's really quite simple. And
yes.
You've already given us some answers, but how about one more?
To breathe into your heart and, you know, walk outside, open your eyes, just take a deep, deep breath and really experience the flows of intelligence that make our lives possible. It's so easy.
Thank you. I feel like this is such a lovely teaser, and I look forward for more. In the meantime, great to connect with you, and thank you for sharing and being on the show.
Thanks for this time. Really a joy.
My pleasure. Our pleasure. Samantha Sweetwater, and once again, True Human is her latest book. I have to say, it's been a pleasure getting to know her work and the many facets of her. I wish we could have talked about some of the other thises and thats, because obviously they're all related, like sowing seeds.
Well, I don't know why we've been working so hard, because it's that simple.
It is. What if it is, though? What if it is? And what if we, like, you know, nobody here hopefully needs a near-death experience, but like we get there and it says, I made this easy and you failed. I made this easy and you failed. Like, sometime maybe it's harder because we made it harder. I don't know.
But that would mean you're succeeding.
Okay, on that very note, more to think about. We have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Melissa, and I am grateful for you and the wisdom you have shared with me. I remember that you told us in the workshop that it is good for us to begin the day with a grateful heart. So my question is, how can one practice gratitude and really be grateful in today's messed up world?
Dear Melissa, I'm happy that you remember what I said about gratitude, and I trust that you will have a better understanding of how gratitude serves us even more during these interesting times. Let's remember that since we are the power in our world, we can create happier days by starting out with a simple prayer like this one. Thank you, thank you, thank you, universe, for helping me focus on and express gratitude for all of the good this day brings to me. Melissa, we often forget that we have so much to be grateful for. You might want to write a gratitude list to help you get started on manifesting more and more wonderful things to be grateful for. And please know that gratitude is not pretending things aren't messed up. Expressing gratitude is choosing where you place your attention while also fully seeing what's going on in today's world. Gratitude is the positive emotional state of recognizing, appreciating, and being thankful for the good things in life, both big and small. So writing a gratitude list could assist you in seeing how many wonderful things you have in your life. My list begins with family and friends who I love and who love me. It also includes gratitude for living in a comfortable and safe place with a very good friend who encourages me to be the best me I can be. I'm also grateful for having access to good and healthy food, and I love the fact that hummingbirds visit us daily. Melissa, this is just a few of the things on my list. I could go on and on and on, and yet what is important is for you to understand that you too have many wonderful things in your world that you have learned to take for granted. So please write down the amazing gifts you've created and have received from others, and begin sharing thank yous with your family and friends. I thank my family and friends daily for their love and appreciation. And I have found that a simple thank you to the mailman, the doorman, the cashier, and many others we connect with during the day will assist us in seeing that gratitude is not only good for us, it is good for the ones we interact with. And finally, I want to thank you for being a good friend and for asking this important question. I look forward to seeing you again soon and seeing how you have allowed gratitude to change your life for the better.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her gratefully at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And in our performance guest segment, we have a Grammy-nominated musician, composer, and spiritual pioneer, best known for the band Gungor and for co-founding the Liturgists. Welcome, Michael Gungor, to the Life Changes Show. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, thanks.
Hey, you sound great. Good to hear you.
Okay, good. I'm glad the microphone is working now.
I just wanted to say that right off. Yeah. And I want to thank Colin Martin for introducing us to you. So thank you, Colin.
Yeah, hello, Colin, if you're listening.
So, you know, actually, now that I've said that, I just made a connection. So Colin does Calling You Home, and you do the group singing and community singing. Have you two done it together yet?
Yeah, he's been coming to the group singing thing that we've been doing in Nevada City.
Ah, nice. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we've been doing this group sing along. It's like a, it's kind of a song circle meets, it's like a worship, we call it, but it's no beliefs required, no dogma or anything, but it's very like heart song, and it's really unitive. We sing kind of non-dual stuff, and Colin's been part of that, and it's just been on second and fourth Wednesdays in Nevada City, and it's been really beautiful so far.
So music has been a part of your life, all your life, as well as spirituality, right?
Yeah, I grew up in church, and my spirituality and my music was always really entwined. And then I left the church years ago as the containers I was in became pretty restrictive for my growth. But I found that even through that, I was really writing a lot of music that was about that journey. And what I found over time was that a lot of us who kind of outgrew some of the structures that we were raised in, it was great and like really freeing to get out of that. But then a lot of times we're just kind of left on our own, wandering the landscapes, looking for meaning and looking how to, there's stuff about church. There's stuff that I came from that was like actually really helpful and meaningful. And some of the early like mystical experiences that I had were in those containers. And so since then we've been really, a group of us have been like, what could that look like getting together and singing together, but without all the fear, the shame, some of the dogma and stuff that we couldn't stay in any longer. And so this experiment called Mystic Hymnals come out of that. It's been super powerful and connective.
And just an example of why singing in a group versus singing alone is transformative.
Yeah, I just think there's something, it's so human. We've always gotten together. Every culture has music at its roots. You know, we got around the fire. We've always sang every major life event, weddings and funerals, birthdays, everything we have music to. We look at when we watch the brain, when people are making music or singing, like it's all lit up. It's somatically rich. It connects us. We find people sing together, their heartbeats even literally like sync up. So there's something about singing together that does something to our bodies, our physiology. I think whatever energy, soul, whatever, it's all engaged. And so there's something, I don't know, it's, we have this like faux connection through the screens that most of us are communicating with people on some level all day, but it's words and it's images. There's something about like breathing together in the same room that you really just can't get from AI. You can't get it from social media. And I think more and more of us are like hungry for that connection. That's not just, even when you're in a public space, people are usually on their screens at this point. So to have us place where we're just really in our bodies in the same space, remembering the unity beneath our differences, I think is important for us as individuals and as a collective.
Well, speaking of unity, I was telling you when we were speaking earlier, I said, you know what you wrote in your talking points that you wanted to have come up. I said, you know, that's going to come up. And we laughed about it, but it was actually Samantha who brought it up first. And it's non-duality. So
yeah, I heard that.
Right? And I'm like, and there it is. So before we hear this first song, tell us how non-duality is enmeshed with music in your mind.
Well, I kind of see all of it as music, like the one living being, void, whatever you want to call it, that is reality. When you get down to anything, it's sort of like this potential, this wave of probability that's being experienced, right? Like subjectively. And that's, you can say it's music, like it's all a frequency. It's all a pattern. It's all repetition, but somehow new. There's so much about music that I just think is life. And when we, for me, I consider music sort of my primary spiritual practice that I learned growing up, because you can't play music, especially if you have any like improvisational element to it. Like I studied jazz in school. You can't play with the music other than right here and right now. Like you can't be late. You can't be early. Otherwise you're not in the pocket. You literally have to be in this moment completely to be playing well. And so I think that there's something about that. You're in your breath, you're in your body, you're in this note, and this note is part of a bigger whole. And it's also part of the silence, and they're dancing together. And so I think anything can be kind of like, you know, it's almost like a fractal, like any part of a hologram, any pixel is the whole thing somehow in itself as well. But I think sometimes those kind of that fractal like quality of reality appears in different ways more clearly. And for me, music, it just, the fractal of music and how it is all of reality really appears clearly. So I find I can just let go of everything when I'm making music, and the music that I'm making now is intended to invite people into that experience as well.
Well, interestingly enough, the song that you shared with us that we're going to start with is All In.
Yeah.
So did you just set it up, or is there more you could say?
It is kind of, that is kind of a setup, but it is that it's being all in on life, like every single moment, and just bringing it all. There's a little moment in the middle that suddenly death is there, even though in the middle is kind of like party song. But to me, that goes together. That's kind of part of the non-dual thing. It's like there's no life without death. There's no love without grief. No up without down. So being fully in on the whole ride of it all is kind of what this song's about.
Okay. Well, here is All In, Michael Gunger. It's his song and he's performing. You're also playing something on it?
All the instruments on this one, I think, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay. Good on you. I didn't know that. Okay, here it is. This is pre-recorded on the Life Changes Show. All In. And there it is, Michael Gungar. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
How fun. So Gungar is Gungor. Yep. And you can find him on the socials and his website. And his website is Gungar Music, GungorMusic.com. And he's Michael Gungar on Instagram. And he has got a book out. And we have the links for all of that at the Life Changes Show page for Michael. But of course, find him at his website and elsewhere. Michael, it's interesting how you talked about growing up within a certain ministry, and then you left, and then you experienced different things, and then you form a group and you call them the Liturgists. and I'm thinking, okay, wait, what did he leave exactly? And then the music, I'm hearing like very spiritual undertones or lyrics. And I thought, okay, so this is a really good question for him. And it was in your talking points. And I'm like, look at this. So living with the paradox, right? The doubt and the wonder and love and spirituality, and it's all in the mix. It's all in the music.
Yeah. And I mean, it was interesting. I had to get away from a lot of the things that I grew up with for a while. But I was listening to Samantha talking about the awakening, and I had my own major awakening experience back in like 2016. And that, after that, I started being able to like hear where I came from differently. It's like all the words of Jesus and all these things that I had left kind of behind for a while. I was like, whoa, there's this stuff everywhere. I could find these like breadcrumbs and these mirrors everywhere through all the different traditions. And so it's been beautiful to be able to sort of reclaim, and I don't use any of the words in the same ways that I did, but it's fun to be able to not be alienated from it anymore. Like I see the whole path, all the things that felt like contradictions were invitations, and there was dissonance and friction, like Samantha was talking about again. And it was clearing the way to this moment being as beautiful and clear as it is. So I'm grateful for the whole journey.
Well, speaking about not using the words in the same way, this next title is like Hallelujah. So it's not Hallelujah, but it's like Hallelujah. So technically not the same way.
Yeah, so this one's, I call it my sexy gospel song, because I've noticed a lot of, I've played a lot of shows at different kinds of venues, but a lot of shows at churches. And I've noticed when we played shows at churches, people, even the same people that we would have seen at a bar the night before, they come into a church and they move differently. They speak to everything. Is like, we kind of forget that we have a body from for sure the waist down, but kind of sometimes even from the neck down. It's just like this straight jacket that we find our bodies in. And I think that there's something really tragic about that. And so this is a song that's like reclaiming the sacredness of the entire body, maybe especially from the waist down. Wow. It's my sexy gospel song.
Well, I asked you who the singer was. I mean, I didn't ask it that way. I said, are you singing this too? So tell us about what we're going to hear.
Yeah, it's all me again. And there's a choir
that's not all you.
Those aren't me, but me playing guitar. That's my voice. And yeah, just leaning into my blues gospel chops here.
Well, okay. Well, here is Like Hallelujah, pre-recorded, Michael Gungar here on the Life Changes Show.
Sing! let the dead man rule you. Let the Lord crawl up your spine and sing your hallelujah.
Thank you, Michael Gungor, G-U-N-G-O-R. Find him at michaelgungor.com and on the socials at Michael Gungor. I, Michael, have to laugh also because I was saying how Samantha had a lot of this's and that's and this and this and, you know, loving what this is or I don't want this to be this way. Your book is called This.
Yeah. And I have a podcast called Loving This as well.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
I loved it. Yeah.
That's perfect. Okay, where do we find your podcast?
Yeah, it's called Loving This Podcast.
Okay, Loving
Michael
This
Gungor, Podcast. Yeah, search for it.
That is brilliant. How perfect is that? And so the book is This, Becoming Free. So that sounds interesting too. You are an interesting guy. Michael, thank you so much for coming on and sharing the interestingness and the music and the non-duality.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure. All the best to you.
You too.
With a big thank you to Michael Gungor and another big thank you to Samantha Sweetwater. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Leisure, I am Filippo Voltaggio, and along with our whole family here at the Life Changes Show, we say to you, as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.